Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
On today's show, we get a recap of the 2025 state legislative session and learn how it impacts our Minnesota veterans. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a message from Major General Sean Mankey, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard.
More than 13,000 men and women serve in the Minnesota National Guard, but of that number, only about 2,000 serve full-time, leaving the remaining 11,000 in need of civilian employers. We'd like to recognize all the great companies who employ our soldiers and airmen. Your support, sacrifice, and accommodation to our National Guard mission and training schedules has not gone unnoticed. Employer support allows our service members to remain focused on our important missions without worrying about how they will support themselves when they return home. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, I want to thank all of our military employers for their support, especially those who participate in our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Initiative.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. In the studio from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is John Kelly. John is the Director of Government Affairs and is responsible for government relations, policy initiatives, oversight of legislative strategies, and biennial budgeting and capital investment requests. John is a proud veteran of the United States Army. He served in both the Army National Guard and the Army Reserves. During his service, he was deployed to Afghanistan, where he served on an Afghan National Army embedded training team. John, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Doug.
Okay, so we've had you on the show before, and I'd like to just start off by saying once again, thanks for your service. We do appreciate that. We like honoring our veterans and our service members here. But as I said, you've been on the show before, and the last time that you were here, which was your official first time on the show, because you'd been here once in an observer's role, at that time, it was kind of a unique situation. We were talking about the legislative session that was already in progress, but yet there was a little bit of turmoil because we had this, the House and the Senate, we had ties and who was in charge, who was doing what, and we're kind of in limbo when I think what you had talked about is, hey, by now we should have already been working a lot of things in session. Although you did prep work, it really wasn't going anywhere yet because nothing was being heard or talked about. So I say all that to say the session's done. They did pass a budget. And I'm just wondering from your perspective, you know, what were your thoughts, the things that you talked about last time that you were hoping you could get for the MDVA? What were the results of that? And, yeah, give us a rundown of how things looked and how things went and how things are now.
Yeah, Doug. I mean, this every session that when they wrap, everybody's always like, oh, man, that was quite the session, or that was unique. This was definitely one of the most unique sessions that I've ever participated in. Just a reminder for our listeners, there was a slow start to the 2025 session, as Doug mentioned. The Senate remained the same as a 34-33 margin, but then there was, it went to 33, and they needed to do a power-sharing agreement after the death of Senator Kari Dietzick. And then on the House side, it ended up being, a bit of a slow start because there was an issue regarding what constituted a quorum, and there needed to be a special election in Roseville. But at the end result, in February, they resolved into a power sharing agreement. And in March, after the special election in Roseville, it fell into a tie. And so it was evenly divided, 67-67 legislature. We had co-chairs of the committees on the House side. So Representative Matt Bliss, who was on the show back in the winter, and then Jay Zhang, Representative Jay Zhang from St. Paul, they led the Military Affairs Division in the House. And then Senator Putnam was the chair of the new Agriculture, Veterans, Broadband, and Rural Development Committee, and there's a subcommittee on veterans. All is that to say, the excellent news here is that while it was a slow start and it was a bit of a unique composition, the legislature came through and supporting significant investment on behalf of Minnesota veterans. And they did so in a really tight fiscal environment. In February, the forecast came out, and we're looking at a structural deficit in the out years. And, you know, they had to be very, very selective about how they spent their funding. So, you know, the department, we fared very well. We received operating adjustments for the healthcare and programs and services divisions. This bill, the money was passed in a veterans omnibus bill for the fourth consecutive session, making this a pretty established norm. This has been a priority for the veterans organizations in our state, the governor, the commissioner, and for the legislature. So it's really great to see that. And the legislature passed the Veterans and Military Affairs Omnibus on an overwhelming bipartisan basis. It was unanimous in the House, and it was a very strong bipartisan vote in the Senate. So it was a little bit of an interesting start, and I say that in the most Minnesotan way possible. but we got there in the end, and we passed in regular session. They just finished their one-day special session on Monday this week, but we had been passed. They passed the Veterans Omnibus in. They didn't need overtime for that one.
And so, you know, you had mentioned about some operating adjustments specific to healthcare and programs and services. Was that a major impact budget-wise, or what? Could you describe a little bit about what that means when you say it's an operating adjustment?
Sure. An operating adjustment at the legislature means an increase of funding above the base level current funding. And so for the healthcare division, which is our veterans' homes across the state, we had our legacy homes, which are the existing homes and domiciliary facilities. And then we built three new veterans' homes in Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston. And the goal here, the legislature appropriated the funding to build the homes. Then we could only staff the homes to a certain level while we waited for certification by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And then we needed to come back to the legislature and get the last operating adjustment, the funding we needed to eventually staff up in the homes and maintain the staffing at our current legacy homes to get to 90% of census, meaning the population in the homes is at 90% of capacity. And so we want to do that. And in order to do that, you know, you have to staff up, you have to have safe staffing levels, and you have to do it in a structured, planned way. And we needed the funding to do that, which the legislature came through with in a big way. So this funding will allow us to ramp up staffing levels to a higher capacity, maintain the staffing at the existing legacy homes, and keep the VA per diems and resident maintenance fees and Medicare reimbursements continuing to also flow into the homes to continue to sustain operations. So we really, the legislature really put our veterans' homes on a solid ground for the foreseeable future, both in the near biennium and out into the tails.
Well, and that's an interesting, you know, well, it's good news, of course, because we've talked about it on this show when we've interviewed the Deputy Commissioner, Eric Maitenin, about how, hey, we have bed space. We just can't fill it because we don't have the staffing.
Right.
And so this is really securing then the ability to bring the staffing up so that we can potentially or hopefully fill some more of those beds and start serving more of our Minnesota veterans.
Absolutely. And in speaking of serving Minnesota's veterans, the Programs and Services Division also at MDVA also received an operating adjustment, while obviously a bit smaller than the funding needed to staff up homes. This is still critical to allowing the division, and that, you know, the Programs and Services Division provides direct services, benefits assistance, helps with veterans, you know, the work around veterans homelessness effort, prevention efforts, claims, education, occupational resources, and memorial affairs. We needed funding for operation, rising costs around operations and IT. And so, you know, we wanted to, you know, get that funding to keep the mission going and not have to have any reductions in services there. And then the legislature understood that and came through with that funding as well. It's really,
you know,
important.
One of the interesting things is that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs in the last 2 years now, one brand new cemetery, four new homes, right? Or three new homes. And so we knew there was going to be a cost with that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that obviously caused some challenges this year. It's good to see that, hey, you know, finally a resolution came and, you know, we're able to fund what we need to fund to do the things that the MDVA needs to do.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, Chair Bliss, when he was on the show, he said, you know, we run a tight ship. And I think that they continue to believe that. And they came through and they're trusting us with a significant investment in taxpayer resources to serve Minnesota's veterans And we're going to be able to continue that mission. And I think it's really, you know, again, you know, a lot of areas of the budget, because of the potential, you know, fiscal cliff that we're facing, you know, in the out years, there were a lot of reductions. But in the veteran space, you saw an increase in funding. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, compared to several other agencies, maybe that's not a lot of money, but it's a significant amount of money for veterans. And it, I mean, just goes to show Minnesota's prioritization of veterans and their families here.
Yeah, and it's awesome to see the fourth omnibus bill passed, which is good news for our Minnesota veterans. This is a great time to take a break. We'll come back. John will talk a little bit more about some of the successes and the things that you are really proud of that got through this state legislative session. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In the studio with me is John Kelly, who's the Director of Government Affairs with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And John, before we went into break, we were talking about, you know, really a good victory, right? Although it took overtime, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs fared pretty well. But one of the things that you mentioned kind of quickly was you mentioned homelessness. And I just want to come back to the efforts as it relates to homelessness. And then food insecurity is another thing that was brought up during this session. And maybe you can just give us a quick highlight of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The legislature has continued to partner with the, you know, the administration and with the department on efforts to have Minnesota be the next state to achieve functional zero for veterans homelessness. And this milestone means that a community has measurably solved veterans homelessness when it does occur. And when it does occur, it's rare and brief. And Minnesota is divided into a region of 10 continuums of care. And at this point, as we're talking here on the radio, 9 of the 10 have declared functional zero, and Ramsey County is the last continuum, and they're close. So the legislature came through with another $12.8 million in appropriations for programs and services for the next 2 years to continue this work. And we're hoping to get across the finish line here. I think, you know, we have some tremendous partners in this space, you know, all of the different, you know, obviously community and, you know, county governments and local city governments, also the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and you know, our tireless efforts from our homelessness team, SOAR team at MDVA. So it's a combined effort, and it's made a tremendous amount of progress. When I was on staff in the governor's office in the governor's first term, you know, I covered homelessness, and we were not anywhere close to this. And in 5 short years or so, we've really made a lot of headway because of the investment by the legislature. And that's been a priority for the legislature. They've also put funding into food insecurity for veterans specifically, you know, and this ties in. I mean, Tom Lyon, he's working. That's his new thing is food insecurity. And you know, there's some serious efforts here happening. $300,000 was granted into Lutheran Social Services for the CORE program to expand outside of Hennepin and Ramsey County. We also continued funding for Metro Meals on Wheels to allow them to spend down what had been a shorter term appropriation. And so there's a significant amount of money going into veterans food insecurity. And I would be remiss also if I didn't mention that the legislature also put in the healthcare division budget an increase in efforts around suicide prevention for veterans. So they increased that amount by $300,000. They also tasked the department with coming up with a comprehensive plan to take this issue head on. That it's a really big priority for Chair Bliss and Vice Chair Bjorn Olson to take this issue on. And, you know, I personally, you know, lost a soldier to suicide when I was in the reserves. I mean, the chair said, you know, we're not winning this fight, and we need to try to put a real laser focus on it. And so we're already taking the initial steps here in the interim, in the, you know, between session period to start implementing on that. We have a pretty tight turnaround. We're going to be working with that with the healthcare division and Rachel Johnson from our department and others to get that going. So I'm excited about that too. I think it's a really important investment.
And three important issues to continue to talk about. And next week we'll have someone from the MDVA on to talk about homelessness and the efforts taking place there. And you mentioned Tom, and I'll mention this at the end of the show as well today, that you know, next week is the Veteran Food Pantry at the Minneapolis VA. And so this is an effort that is taken serious, or an issue that's being taken seriously. And it does take money, but we got to have some laser focus, like you mentioned, so that you can really start to, we're never going to get rid of the problem, but we got to have resources in place so that, as you'd mentioned, you know, they're rare, or when it does happen, it's, you know, we can timely take care of it.
Right.
So let's just shift gears, because we only have a couple of minutes left. And, you know, we talked about a lot of things and, you know, a lot of things that the MDVA, of course, wanted to make sure that they get continued funding for, right? It's important to get the funding so you can keep on operating. But is there anything that just sticks out to you, any policy updates or something that you're like, okay, this was a big deal and I really want to highlight it?
Sure. I mean, I can run really quickly. There was some good, I would almost call it, you know, cleanup, streamlining kind of policy items. So, you know, we updated the access. We have, you know, MDVA has read-only access to this MAXIS database that's maintained by the Department of Human Services. This will allow more teams at MDVA when they're interacting with a veteran who needs state supports, not just from us, but across all the different agencies. They'll be able to kind of cut through the red tape a little bit, connect them up with as many support services as you can. And especially when you're dealing with someone who, you know, is housing, has housing instability, you have that person and they're talking to you, you want to try to get them connected up with as much stuff as possible in that moment. And
right.
That's going to allow our team to do that. And so that was a really strong, change. And we kept the guardrails on and, how the bill started versus how it ended, it was strengthened as it went through the legislative process, and it was a really good bill. We also streamlined the state statute for burial eligibility to move it in line with federal guidelines. And so there's not going to be any confusion between what the state statute says and what we've always followed because of the way we interact with the federal VA, that, you know, making sure that eligibility lines up. We also made a change in the omnibus bill, they passed a change that allows surviving spouses to retain education benefits even after remarriage, and it also clarifies the eligibility to dependents of the deceased veteran. That's just some of the stuff, you know, they're updating it to reflect the modern times that we live in.
Right.
You know, and then lastly, there's a provision that was passed to authorize the creation of a bronze plaque in the Court of Honor on the Capitol grounds for Gold Star and Blue Star families. I think, that's something that that idea originated from Commissioner Lindsay. I mean, we talk a lot about veterans, but you can't talk about veterans and their service without the sacrifice and recognize the sacrifice of these Blue Star families and Gold Star families that, you know, gave that last full measure of devotion. So I think it's really cool that we are, you know, are going to be doing that. We'll be working with the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, say that three times fast, through their process this summer. And we're going to be getting that going and hope to see that get done as well.
Yeah, and I was actually surprised to know that there wasn't already something honoring,
right?
You know, so interesting. Glad to see that got through. And all right, so we're about 2 minutes or so here, and there was a lot of conversation or traffic or whatever you want to call it about special guerrilla units. And I know that there was some movement made in regards to that. I wonder if you just clarify that for us.
Sure. So so in the Veterans Omnibus Bill, they created a new section of statute that it creates the veterans of the secret war in Laos. And these are individuals who served in the secret war in Laos with the CIA and you know, other U.S. personnel. And it recognizes them as veterans of the secret war. And we are tasked with a couple of things here. You're either, the eligibility for this as to be a veteran is either, naturalized under the Federal Hmong Veterans Naturalization Act of 2000, or, you'll be, it'll be established by the protocol that will be carried out by the task force on the special guerrilla units that will be setting up this fall. So we it has a very specific list of participants that we will be posting for this on the Secretary of State's website soon. And then we will get – once the task force is established, we'll have a series of meetings, and then we have to make recommendations for protocol to the legislature, and then they'll pass that into law. Once that verification process for protocol is established, Secret War in Laos veterans will be entitled to limited benefits such as funeral honor guards, grave markers, and veteran designation on driver's license and ID cards. So, you know, recognizing and honoring the service of you know, these special guerrilla unit veterans who fought alongside the United States in the Secret War. And so that's a this is something that's been a long time coming, and it finally came to fruition. So so we're interested to see how that goes this summer and fall, and we'll be working hard to get that done as well.
Well, hey, we appreciate the update. Real quick question, because we're out of time right now. But all right, are you celebrating now, or are you right back to work? Because it never ends, does it?
Yeah, I think when I was on here, I talked about how I think about it as like a sports season, regular yeah. season and off season. And they had, you know, stoppage time, I guess, was Monday. And, you know, but they, I mean, we're taking a little bit of time here to catch our breath, and then we're going to be rolling right back into it to prepare for 26. And I also want to just mention really quickly that the legislature also came through with a bonding bill this year, which will be, you know, funding for MDVA. MDVA received $7.5 million that will go towards improvements in, you know, critical need infrastructure stuff in our homes and cemeteries. So they got a lot of work done, even if it took them a little bit extra time.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, John Kelly, thanks so much for joining us here on Minnesota Military Radio. Really appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In a moment, we'll check in with the chair of the Senate Subcommittee on Veterans and Military Affairs. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, an update from Brad Lindsay, the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Many veterans are drawn to have their service recognized long after they've passed. Here at MDVA, we are committed to providing dignified and compassionate burial options for veterans. This is often one of the only benefits they request. We operate four state veteran cemeteries located in Little Falls, Preston, Duluth, and Redwood Falls. Minnesota State Veteran Cemeteries are highly rated for the beautifully maintained grounds where loved ones can visit to pay their respects. In addition, each cemetery integrates sustainability efforts to ensure harmony with nature. Learn more about our state veteran cemeteries at minnesotaveteran.org/cemeteries.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Since 2021, Eric Putnam has represented District 14, the Greater St. Cloud area, in the Minnesota Senate. He currently serves as the chair of the Committee on Agricultural, Broadband, and Rural Development and as the chair of the Senate Subcommittee on Veterans and Military Affairs. For a day job, he's researched and taught at St. John's University and the College of St. Benedict for 22 years. He did grow up in a military family, and today he lives in St. Cloud with his wife, two college-age children, and he says his own words, too many dogs. Senator, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it. I forgot I mentioned that thing about the too many dogs.
I don't know. How many is too many, Senator?
Well, we ended up taking on a foster, and it was supposed to be for a weekend, and it's been 9 months. So we're at three now.
Well, and you're at that point now where you've had them for so long that you can't give them up. They're part of the family.
Exactly.
No,
it's tough.
We've got quite a bit to talk about. We don't have a whole bunch of time. But one of the things that I understand is that you are a part of a military family. Is it true that your dad served?
Yeah, so it actually goes back pretty deep. My mother's father, so my grandfather, my mother's side, was a chaplain at the Battle of the Bulge. And my dad's side, his dad, my paternal grandfather, was a medic in the Pacific. And then my father was in Nam. My eldest uncle was in Korea. His two other brothers were also in Vietnam for long periods of time. And my uncle on my mother's side also fought in Vietnam. And I have a cousin who was in the Guard and another cousin who just retired as a lieutenant colonel in the Corps of Engineers. So I've never served, but virtually everyone in my family has.
Well, and you know what we can say is that especially families of military service members, that family serves right along with that person. So, you know, just by proxy, you've served as well. So thank you for your service and obviously to all your family members as well. Senator, so you are District 14. The note I have is Greater St. Cloud area. Can you tell us just a little bit about your district?
Sure, yeah. So it's all of St. Cloud, all of White Park, all of St. Augusta, Minden Township, and the cool parts of St. Joseph.
The cool parts. Okay, good to know.
But it's a fascinating area. You know, it's changing. It's self-reflective. It's thoughtful about the changes that we're making. To me, it's really one of the most American spots in Minnesota because we're conscious of our changes and we're trying to work our differences together. And that's what Americans do.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the conversations that John Kelly and I talked about was just kind of the session this year. Started off maybe a little bit of slow, took a little bit of overtime to get things complete. But this is your first year as the chair of the Minnesota Senate Committee with the jurisdiction over Veterans Affairs. And I'm just wondering if you might want to talk about your experience in this new role and kind of the policy and everything that goes along with it.
Yeah, sure. You know, don't let John know this, but the MDVA folks were really helpful with helping me get a bigger grasp around this particular issue and this jurisdiction. It's something I always wanted to work on a little bit more. You know, a couple years ago before I got into politics, I would call bingo at the VA, and that was my service to vets. But now I get to do a lot more. And in order to do more, you need people to help you do it. And MDVA has been really, really helpful. One of the biggest challenges with the Veterans Subcommittee is it's a subcommittee and not a committee. We just didn't have the resources or the capacity or really the ability to have a separate independent committee. But when I was asked to take this chair, I said I would only do it if we had two separate budget lines. I wasn't going to pit farmers and soldiers against each other with one bank account. So making sure that Veterans and Military Affairs got its due was one of the biggest challenges that I faced. And I think we did a pretty good job with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is extremely important, right? When we talk about an omnibus bill, right, you want to be able to vote up or down on issues that relate to our military and to our veterans. And as you said, you know, don't bring in the other things that don't directly apply to it. So we appreciate you being able to do that. And just a quick side note here, John is listening. So he actually heard that compliment. And I saw him with his phone. He was recording that. So he might use this with you or against you later. I can't confirm. And then the second thing is that who does not like to call bingo? So we appreciate you doing that because that's a heck of a lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad John's listening, but yeah, probably knows me well enough. He knows I'm a politician, so he knows I probably didn't mean it.
Oh, boy. All right. So, you know, you said that you relied on help to, you know, take on this role. We appreciate the framework you put into place, right, the two budget lines. But was what you expected going into this, what actually happened throughout the process? Any lessons learned?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunately got much more partisan than I thought it would be. I think that I'm not typically a very partisan dude. And things got a little bit more partisan than I would have hoped around a couple particular issues. And I think that was unfortunate. But by and large, people worked together pretty well to get some stuff done. But that, I think, was probably one of the biggest surprises I had.
You know, we don't, obviously, you're in politics, and, you know, on this show, one of our rules is that we don't like to talk about politics, right? Because, you know, we want to support everybody, doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. And I think that, for the most part, people can get behind veterans' issues, right? It's not a political issue. It's not a left versus right or a thing like that. But so you mentioned that there was a little bit more politics, and things did get a little bit partisan in there. So, you know, as a subcommittee, you know, as the chair, like how do you approach it? How do you deal with it? How do you still get the things done that you want to get done, knowing that there are some politics or partisanship involved in this?
Well, yeah, it's tough because, you know, we were talking before about the budget, but typically the way things work in St. Paul is that one thing will get pulled into something else, no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try. You can't get people to focus on solving the problem because there's some other problem they want to solve too. So trying to keep things independent and keep people focused on solving the problem is a big part of the issue. But the other part of that, and it's with politics and just with being a human being, is that personal relationships are really important. And so being in a new jurisdiction was a new opportunity for me to develop deeper personal relationships with different legislators and different stakeholders. And that's key. And they have to not be, especially in an area like veterans, they have to be authentic relationships. They can't be things where you're just trying to get something. And I think we did a pretty good job trying to establish those relationships, and it helped a little bit. But it still was a bit of a surprise to me. I thought that everyone would be focused on, a little bit more focused on solving problems, a little bit less on scoring points.
So I have to ask, and if you don't want to answer, you don't have to, but, you know, like, did you guys get into some real heated knockdown, throwdown types of arguments in there? Or is it a really good opportunity to have these open conversations about the issues that matter?
You know, it's weird, and I'm not trying to sound cynical here, but I'm an honest dude, that more often than not, we talk to cameras instead of to each other, and sometimes that gets in the way. So we did have some kind of more spicy conversations on occasion, but that's because someone was giving a speech that they wanted to tweet out later.
Sure.
Or have on their YouTube channel. But, you know, behind closed doors, people are people, and you do have much more genuine conversations. I don't really get angry very much. That's just not my idiom. People are complicated, and I think you enter into every conversation with that understanding, and that forces you to be empathetic and kind of see where they're trying to come from. So I didn't have that many, like, yelling matches, but there was some yelling that went on for cameras and for reporters.
Well, in the day of social media, right, we have to have that. Senator, we'll take a quick break here, and we come back. I want to ask you about what were some of the provisions in the bill that you are most proud of. And so we'll do that when we come back from the break. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. On the phone with me is Senator Eric Putnam, representing District 14, the Greater St. Cloud area, and the fun parts of St. Joe. Senator, you know, before we went into break, we were talking about obviously funding and some of the partisan stuff and the politics, but you know, all of that aside, the bill still was passed. There was an agreement that was made, and I'm just wondering if you might be able to highlight something in there or a couple of things in there that you're really most proud of that we're able to get pushed through.
I think the end result is actually a really great bill. You know, and we hear a lot about the $18 billion surplus that some people would say was wasted, but we spent $100 million of those dollars towards building three new vet homes. So I don't think that's a waste. But we needed more money to make those things, those spaces, as operational as they could be. So that was our big financial investment this session, was making sure that we put enough money into the vet homes so that they could serve the people that needed to be served. We also almost fully funded, the Guard's recruitment and retention programs, because that's really important. If you're going to go to college and you expect to get your tuition paid, you should actually get your tuition paid. So I was glad that we were able to take care of those things. But one thing I'm really excited about is that we were able to create a new Meals on Wheels program for Greater Minnesota veterans and enable the funding of the program in the cities to maintain. And food insecurity is a real big problem for everybody, but especially for veterans. So I'm really excited about those programs too.
Yeah, that's awesome. And John Kelly actually highlighted those additional funds to Meals on Wheels and the CORE program to help with Greater Minnesota area so we can reach those veterans that you know, need assistance outside of the metro area. So so thanks for your efforts there and for taking care of our veterans. The last question I have for you is, you know, this session, some might call it a crazy one, but it is over. And, you know, 2026 is right around the corner. And so, you know, you've got some lessons learned, obviously, from 2025 here. But when you look ahead, is there something that you want to try to bring into the mix this time around, or some other policy or initiative that you want to make sure gets funded for either our military or for our veterans in general?
Yeah, for sure. I have sort of two big ideas for next session. One, if we have money, and one, if we don't. And if we have any money, what I'd like to do is, one of the things that surprised me this past session are all the phenomenal nonprofits that take vets fishing or hunting or get them out in the wilderness. There's lots of them. And I think that it would be in our best interest to create some kind of sustainable funding for those groups so they don't have to come back every session and beg for scraps, but we have like a program where they could apply for resources that they know will always be there. So if you have any money, that's one thing I'd like to do. Because some of the stories we heard, man, the stories of people's lives being changed by finally being able to go fishing again and the relationships that are built. really cool stuff. So I want to be able to fund that. But perhaps our biggest priority is fixing something that we weren't able to fix this session, which is claim sharks and those folks who take money out of veterans benefits for really no good reason, for not really helping them. And, you know, this past year, one of the claim sharks companies spent $4 million on lobbying, and every single penny of that $4 million really rightfully belonged to a veteran. So I want to make sure that we can take care of that this session.
Well, and that is a big topic. I know that the MDVA has talked about that previously. And, you know, the interesting thing is all someone would need to do is go visit their county veteran service officer, and they would get that same service, but for free. Because those county service officers are there to take care of our veterans and ensure that they get the benefits and entitlements that they've earned and they deserve. So, you know, maybe we can get that through next time, and that would be a good thing for our veterans, so they're not paying out of pocket for a service they could get for free.
I think so too. And we spent so much time in legislature talking about waste, fraud, and abuse, and here it was, you know, in bright lights, and yet we allowed some lobbyists to kind of get in the way of us fixing the problem, which is frustrating, but we'll get back at it and we'll do better next time. And I'm confident that we'll get some change, the change that we need.
Yeah. Well, Senator, thanks so much for your service to our veterans, to our state. And thanks for spending just a few minutes with us here on Minnesota Military Radio. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was great to visit. I really appreciate the time.
You bet. Thank you. That's Senator Eric Putnam representing District 14, the Greater St. Cloud area here in Minnesota. Joining us on the phone is the director of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Patrick Kelly. Director, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, hi, Doug. It is always great to be with you. Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you on. Here we are, the start of summer. Things are heating up, so to speak, which is nice. A little bit nicer weather out there. And I know you got a lot of things going on out at the Minneapolis VA. And one of the things that sticks out to me is that you have a recruitment fair on the horizon. And I was hoping you might be able to give our listeners a little detail about that and when that is and what other information is important.
Yeah, great, Doug. Thanks. This is an unusual kind of recruitment fair. So this recruitment fair has to do with VA research. And so we have many, many research protocols at the Minneapolis VA. So we are always recruiting veterans who are interested in being part of those research efforts. And so this Wednesday, June 25th, from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock in the flag atrium, the main sort of main auditorium downstairs, we are having a recruitment fair, so our researchers will explain their research. They'll explain what it is they're looking for in terms of veterans participation. And then we will engage them in some level of research based on their interest. And so our research directly benefits veterans. And so if a veteran is interested in being part of that research, we're recruiting. We're recruiting June 25th from 9 to 11.
And, Director, is that something like the Million Veteran Study that was going on, or
is
this something totally different?
That is a perfect example, Doug. That is one of those programs, and there are many, many others, but just like that.
Yeah, awesome. Well, another awesome thing is the other day, Director, as I was collecting my mail, and I saw the American Legion paper, the Legionnaire, and then I flipped it open. The front cover, there's this big picture of Mr. Tom Lyons, our founding host, and I thought that was really a great picture and a nice article, and I know you want to highlight that for us.
Well, you know, first of all, we are so grateful for Tom, not only during his military radio days, but his new passion is this whole issue of helping veterans who are at some food risk or food insecurity. So Tom has started a nonprofit. You know, for those of you listeners who get the American Legion newsletter every month, it's beautiful. Tom is featured. It's not about Tom. It's about the food pantry. But, you know, Tom and Butch, you know, they really sort of started this. They got this, they got a nonprofit going, and it's been unbelievably successful. They're looking for new donors, but more importantly, they're looking for ways to help veterans who have food insecurity. Tom's doing an unbelievable job for that, and it's really a great article. I hope your listeners get a chance to read it.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. It was not about Tom. It was about the efforts to, you know, help our veterans who have some type of food insecurity. And in his words, no veteran should go to bed at night hungry. And so, yeah, great passion project for him. And I know that He really wants to try to solve this problem, or at least make those resources available so that our veterans can get some food.
So,
Director, you know, we're in June as we're recording this right now, and the month of July is obviously next month. And one of the big events that we've been talking about on this show for quite a while is the National Veterans Wheelchair Games. We've had Rachel on to talk about it. That's the chair. And obviously you've mentioned it. We've been plugging for volunteers. You're 30 days out. Are you nervous about this at all, or do you have everything good to go?
You know, I say we have everything good to go, and that's largely because we have some incredibly committed staff who've been working on this really for more than a year. And so it's going to be a huge success. There are over 600 wheelchair-bound veterans signed up. And one thing we could use our listeners' help with is if anybody is interested in volunteering, Doug. So it's wheelchairgames.org, real simple. You can put it in Google. You can put it in your browser. One word, wheelchairgames.org. We're looking for about 3,000 volunteers in a whole variety of efforts. And so if anybody's interested in volunteering, it's going to be, again, 17 to 22 July, from the airport to the convention center to other venues all around the Twin Cities. I have great confidence it's going to be huge and it's going to be very successful.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, Director. Appreciate you. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, Doug.
You bet. Before we close out today's show, I want to let you know that the next Food Pantry for Veterans is on Tuesday, June 17th at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center from 10 to 3. This event does take place the third Tuesday of the month. Thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. Please join us next week when we will discuss veteran homelessness and hear from the Army Corps of Engineers. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week and you find a way to thank and honor those who have and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.